Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Jamie Floyd in for Brian Lehrer on WNYC. As though the tensions between the U.S. and Pakistan were not already high enough following the early morning attack on Osama bin Laden's compound near a Pakistani military academy on Monday, the rhetoric spiked in intensity yesterday. Pakistan's Foreign Secretary Salman Bashir said there would be, quote, disastrous consequences for the United States if there were to be any more secret raids like the one which killed bin Laden on Pakistani soil. The head of Pakistan's army ordered that the American military presence there be reduced to the, quote, minimum essential, including scaling back the CIA's presence. As Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, Senator John Kerry, and others in Washington urged that cooler heads prevail, news came late last night that 10 people had been killed near the Afghan border during the first U.S. drone attacks in Pakistan since bin Laden's death. There's certainly a lot of ground to cover in what seems to be the crumbling diplomatic relationship between the two countries. Joining me now from Washington is Daniel Markey, Senior Fellow for India, Pakistan, and South Asia at the Council on Foreign Relations. And Wall Street Journal correspondent Matthew Rosenberg joins us from Islamabad, Pakistan. Gentlemen, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Listeners, this show has been taking calls all week from Pakistani Americans, and many have expressed relief at how Osama bin Laden's death turns a page for their lives in the U.S. But we are opening the phones now to Pakistani Americans and others to get reactions or questions about the tensions between the U.S. and Pakistan. So as you watch these accusations fly on both sides, what do you think about the future of this uneasy alliance between the two allies? Give us a call, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Do you think the U.S. should cut aid to Pakistan, for example? Is Pakistan right in feeling tense about the U.S. carrying out operations on their soil without telling their government? And Pakistani Americans in particular, do you worry about the perception of Pakistan in the U.S. now? Our phones are open, 212-433-9692. Of course, there is also our show page, WNYC.org, for your comments. First to you, Matthew Rosenberg, there in Pakistan. You covered the military's public response yesterday, and the Wall Street Journal interviewed Foreign Secretary Bashir. What was the message from him and other military and intelligence officials yesterday, the first time that they gave any details about Pakistan's response?
The first thing they all say is, look, they're happy about this, too. And I don't doubt that. I don't think there's speculation that there may have been some elements of the military and the intelligence service, the ISI, involved in this. But among the leadership, there's very little doubt that they wanted him gone, too. Al-Qaeda's not a group that they've really had a tight relationship with, and they have done a lot over the last decade to go after Al-Qaeda guys. Khalid Sheikh Mohammed was caught by the Pakistanis, for example. But, you know, they also very protective of their sovereignty. They have a that's a contentious relationship with the U.S. and has been for quite a while. And the launching of a raid deep into their territory was a total embarrassment for them. And they know it, and they've acknowledged that there were intelligence failures on their part. And they're angry about it, and that's pretty clear. Now, they're trying to spin that anger into trust us and tell us next time we'll do this together. The Americans don't trust them, and the Americans are saying, no, do things, and you go after now more people that we want, and we'll see where this goes. But I think the message is it's hard for them because they're in a difficult spot. Somebody is gone that they wanted gone to, but it was done in a way that is a terrible challenge to their own authority in their country. And they need to play to that audience and to a foreign audience and say, don't do this again.
Daniel Markey, General Kayani, the head of Pakistan's army, spoke to Pakistani reporters about scaling back the American presence there. And it's not the first time that Pakistan has made moves in that direction this year, even before the events of this week. What do you make of that threat?
Well, I think, as the point was made before, the Pakistani military and especially General Kayani are under tremendous internal domestic pressure, as well as pressure from within the ranks of the army to do something in response to what they perceived as being this violation of their territorial sovereignty, and also the embarrassment of killing the world's most notorious terrorist right under their noses. So they have to act. They have to maintain they believe that they have to maintain and show toughness, and this is one way that they're seeking to do that. Now, the removal of U.S. military forces from Pakistan, to the extent that they're there, and they're not there in great numbers, won't do anything with respect to the kinds of operations that were undertaken against bin Laden. But it gets at this underlying defensiveness, and it's sort of an effort to show that they're tough, even when they've been caught in a very almost impossible situation. So it won't change too much, and you're right. He had already asked for this before. There was the Raymond Davis affair of this CIA contractor who had killed two Pakistanis in broad daylight in Lahore and was then in jail, and the subsequent diplomatic dispute also brought similar comments from General Kayani about the need to draw down U.S. military forces in the country.
And that dates back to January, right?
Correct. And they were angry about the accelerated use of drone strikes on Pakistani territory along the Afghan border before that. So there's been a simmering dispute that turned into a diplomatic crisis that's now broken out into the kind of crisis that we really haven't seen since 9/11. It's a real pivot point in the relationship, or potentially one.
So how do you think, Daniel Markey, the United States will respond?
Well, so far, you know, you mentioned the first use of a drone strike along the Afghan border since the killing of bin Laden. And I think, to me, that signals that the United States, the Obama administration, is going to press its advantage, is going to seek to not to back down under sort of the Pakistani criticism, or to accept that the Pakistanis need a cooling off period in order to resume a kind of business as usual, but to push the point that not only is it not acceptable that the Pakistanis didn't know or claim not to have known where bin Laden was, but it's not acceptable that other terrorists and militants are based inside of Pakistan. The United States is going to continue to do everything necessary to go after them until the Pakistanis do everything that they can possibly do to go after them, of which the United States is not convinced is actually the case yet.
And along those lines, CIA Director Leon Panetta told members of Congress on Tuesday that Pakistan was, quote, either involved or incompetent in allowing Osama bin Laden to live for over 5 years in a town that is home to one of the country's top military academies. Former Pakistani President Pervez Musharraf echoed that sentiment in an interview with NPR Today.
One can draw only two conclusions. One is complicity from our intelligence agencies. The second is incompetence. And I strongly believe in the latter. It is their incompetence. I think one would blame them for failing in their duties, but I cannot imagine that there was complicity.
So either way, it doesn't look good for Pakistan. Matthew Rosenberg, back out to you, Wall Street Journal, there in Islamabad, Pakistan. How is the public there reacting to these embarrassing allegations? Are they more upset about the United States carrying out an operation on Pakistani soil without their government knowing, or about bin Laden living for years near Islamabad under the nose of the military?
I think it's a little bit of both. They're pretty upset at their government. I mean, you rarely see direct criticism of the army and the intelligence service in the newspapers, on TV, and you've seen a lot of it in the last week in ways that you don't often see here. You know, there's this myth in Pakistan that the military is the one really, truly functioning institution, that it is the most efficient institution and ultimately safeguards the country. And I think for a lot of Pakistanis, that's been shown not to be the case this week. And the fact that some helicopters could fly in here, there could be a 40-minute firefight, and they could leave, and nobody actually knew what was going on, is incredibly troubling for a lot of Pakistanis. And that Osama bin Laden lived here is troubling for a lot of Pakistanis. Al-Qaeda is not... It's not like other militant groups. that do have some support and popular support in Pakistan.
Mm-hmm.
Al-Qaeda is more of an outlier, and for a lot of Pakistanis, was not something they wanted around or would welcome.
And at the same time, there are reports that Pakistan's spy agency, the ISI, Inter-Services Intelligence, had provided initial information which led to the operation early Monday in Pakistan. Can you give us any more details on that?
Yeah, well, the readout we got from the foreign secretary was that there was some kind of the ISI picked up a phone number that turned out in 2009, and this turned out to be the courier. They picked it up. They were intercepting a conversation in Arabic, and they were passing this on to the CIA, he said, and they didn't know what it was at the time. The CIA said they only got this phone number from the Pakistanis. There's a little dispute there over who gave what, but what is clear is that a phone number belonging to the courier was picked up by the ISI, is passed on to the CIA, and that this was part of what did lead to bin Laden. But the Pakistanis didn't know at the time that's what they had. And the foreign secretary was very clear about that and gracious at acknowledging the CIA has better capabilities than this and was able to make something with the Pakistanis had not been able to figure out.
I'm Jamie Floyd in for Brian Lehrer on WMYC, WMYC.org. My guests are Wall Street Journal correspondent Matthew Rosenberg. He joins us from Islamabad. And Daniel Markey, Senior Fellow for India, Pakistan, and South Asia at the Council on Foreign Relations. We're talking about new tensions between U.S. and Pakistan following the death of Osama bin Laden. Let's take a call from Mohammed. He's in Staten Island. Mohammed, you're on WMYC.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I want to make one comment that in Pakistan there's a widespread impression that Pakistan had a very bad deal vis-a-vis United States on the Afghan issue, that the whole fiasco is the creation of United States to settle its dues with Soviet Union, and now the Pakistan on the western border is spending 10 times more what they get from United States. And United States never tried to do anything to establish democratic institution in Pakistan. They always supported undemocratic dictators. Thank you.
Very complicated. And Daniel Markey, it sounds like it's one for the Council on Foreign Relations, the complicated relationship between Pakistan, the U.S., and especially along the Afghan border post 9/11.
Yeah, the caller makes some interesting points. He's absolutely right that the general Pakistani perception is that the United States has done far too little to actually help Pakistan in and of itself, either to help the average people of Pakistan with development and economics, or, as he pointed out, to assist or support or encourage democratic transition, certainly during the Musharraf period, that the United States has been entirely fixated on its own security concerns, primarily international terrorism, and by extension the war in Afghanistan, and that Pakistanis have been the ones who have suffered as victims from all of this. This is the perception there. There is a certain element of truth to it, which is to say the United States certainly hasn't proven to Pakistanis that it can be a helpful partner and that it can do things that really do solve their concerns. On the other hand, it doesn't get to the bottom of the problem that the Pakistani state, that is the military and intelligence apparatus, has continued to do things well since the war in Afghanistan in the 80s to support, provide haven to a variety of militant groups, both for use in Afghanistan and also, unfortunately, to sow seeds of disorder and violence inside of India. And these are things that the Pakistani state has done that have been profoundly counterproductive, that are less, I think, appreciated by average Pakistanis, and also create frustration here in the United States and make us less likely to see the Pakistani version of that history as being fully correct.
Here's Secretary of State Clinton in Rome yesterday grappling with the Pakistani relationship.
It is not always an easy relationship. You know that, but on the other hand, it is a productive one for both of our countries, and we are going to continue to cooperate between our governments, our militaries, our law enforcement agencies, but most importantly, between the American and Pakistani people.
Daniel Markey, what of the future of the war in Afghanistan? I mean, many in Washington and beyond have argued this week that the death of bin Laden marks the time to bring those troops home on both sides of the political aisle here. Do you agree, and what would that mean for relations with Pakistan if we no longer need that strategic access?
Correct. There is a general point of truth here, which is that, you know, the war in Afghanistan is largely justified by the 9/11 attacks, and by the Obama administration has been very clearly and directly linked to the continued existence of core al-Qaeda leadership in the region. That is bin Laden, Zawahiri, and their operational command. Now that that has taken a severe blow and may suffer subsequent blows in coming weeks, there is a good question to be asked here about, so why are we at war with 100,000 troops in Afghanistan? The problem is that now that we've been at war there for nearly a decade, the how we leave and what we leave behind takes on a significance that in my mind goes well beyond simply what happens to al-Qaeda. And in particular, as you pointed out, there are direct ramifications for Pakistan's future stability. It's my sense that we should actually be seeing this moment as an opportunity. What with the number of forces we have there in Afghanistan and this actual victory against al-Qaeda, we should be pressing the case. We should be pushing harder rather than talking about how we intend to get out very quickly, even though I agree we need to draw down in due course. We should be pushing to press the enemy, shift the way that Pakistan sees that war in Afghanistan so that they will be more helpful and under coercion from us, and then use that strength, that perception of strength, to force a political settlement with the remaining insurgents. So it's victory out of strength, not out of desperation and weakness.
And perception.
Which is, I think, the way, or even a perception that the war is over. It's not over.
So that perception ultimately becomes reality. Let's take a call from Saqib in Queens. You are on WNYC.
Hi. I just wanted to comment on your earlier things that were happening, that you guys were talking about. In my opinion, the perception of Pakistan here in the U.S. is not going to change. It's not about to change in the next decade or so because of all the situation, because of the war that's happening there. And on the other point of the U.S. aid to Pakistan, I think it should stop immediately or soon in the future, and as well as the U.S. Army and other U.S. installations in the in Pakistan to actually leave Pakistan. I think U.S. being in Pakistan is harming Pakistan's society as well as the country because it's gotten a civil war since 9/11. And if this keeps up for another few more years, we might even have more than one Pakistan, to tell you the truth. So I think most Pakistanis believe that the U.S. should, now that they have achieved the major goal, they should pack up and leave and let the country develop.
Thank you, Saqib, for your call. And Daniel Markey, we heard Secretary of State Clinton talking about cooperation with Pakistan, but if we talk dollars and cents, since 9/11, the country has received roughly $18 billion in aid from the U.S. Where do you see that part of the equation going?
Well, I think the caller is right that most Pakistanis don't see the utility of having a continued heavy U.S. presence in Pakistan. And I think a big reason why they don't see it is because they haven't seen very much of that $18 billion affect their lives in very positive ways. That's true in large part because a lot of that money has gone to the military, unseen to the average Pakistani. Also because the money that has gone to the civilian side, a lot of that has been hidden in Pakistani budgets, hasn't produced a lot of big-ticket projects with signs that suggest they came from the United States. And so, the average Pakistani doesn't see what the value of U.S. partnership really is. I think Secretary Clinton is right to suggest that we need to change that. The administration has been routinely right in its rhetoric about what they plan to do, the expansion of efforts there, the allocation of more resources. It's just the money hasn't flowed very rapidly, and certainly not in a way that's changed attitudes for the positive in Pakistan. So unless that changes, really in a very significant significant way. I think what the caller suggests is the general Pakistani attitude about the United States will persist and perhaps even get worse.
Matthew Rosenberg, Wall Street Journal. Did Foreign Secretary Bashir, getting back to the events of this week, talk at all about the intelligence gleaned from those captured during the raid, those who survived, and do they intend to hand over that information? Will U.S. authorities have any opportunity to interview those witnesses in military custody there, including reportedly bin Laden's 12-year-old daughter?
Mr. Bashir dodged the question and said that was the concern of a different department. But people in that department said, senior people, said that no, the U.S. is not going to be given access. And they said right now they're getting a little bit that bin Laden lived there for 5 years and a few other details. It doesn't sound like they're getting much out of these guys. But they were very clear that they're not providing access to the U.S. right now, and they don't plan to. How much of that is a negotiating tactic is hard to say. Oftentimes, at moments like this, you get a lot of tough talk out of both sides. And a lot of it has to do with negotiating who's going to get what and how they're going to proceed here and how the relationship's going to kind of get repaired and divvied up again. And that's what it sounded like to me. But, you know, their stance right now is no access for the Americans.
All right. Well, thank you both very much. My guests have been Daniel Markey, Senior Fellow for India, Pakistan, and South Asia at the Council on Foreign Relations, and Matthew Rosenberg, Wall Street Journal correspondent, who joined us from Pakistan. And coming up next, Evan Osnos of The New Yorker will join us from Beijing to talk about the Chinese contemporary artist Ai Weiwei, who has been detained by the Chinese government since April. That's coming up next on WNYC. I'm Jamie Floyd, in for Brian Lehrer.